Are you having a good time so far? Yeah, all right.
Well, all you Petra fans out there, we've done it. We have reached the official end of the line. Guys, this is it. This is the final farewell. The last time that I'm going to say thank you for pressing play on Rock, a Petrospective. I'm Lindsay Hall.
And I'm Dave Hall.
And it's bittersweet, isn't it, Dave?
It is. Are you sure?
Yeah, Dave, they don't know what's coming up next. Let's just tease this out a little bit. Let's play with the feelings.
It is sad when someone says farewell. After 33 magnificent years, Petra want to say farewell. And that is sad. It is very sad. Just out of interest, did you see that there was a 50th anniversary concert the other day?
Yeah.
But we're saying farewell. But
we're Phil. We're never gonna see or hear from Petra ever again. Until the next time someone retires.
That's right. At the time, it had the hallmarks. It was the farewell album. It was, I think everyone anticipated that this was the end, This was the end of the road for the band. And I think what they've put out is a fitting farewell of the ministry and of their music.
I'd agree. It's a complete honesty on this one. I've never been terribly familiar with this album. I think I listened to it once around the time when it was released, and I've really never revisited it. So my impressions of this are coming pretty clean from just this last week, having reviewed the album for this podcast. And it really is. I don't know. I feel like I've got some complicated feelings about it, to be honest. But it is one that, at its heart, it feels like a very genuine sort of expression of gratitude to the fans.
Yeah.
That's probably the best way and the highest praise that I can pay this album. Everything about it really does feel like it is a huge thank you to the fans who have supported and propelled the ministry through, at that point, 33 years.
I agree. I think it is the band's, and I think I'll take it a step further. I think it's Bob and John's way of thanking everyone who has supported them, the fans, the ministry over the years, and it's their way. To me, it's a tribute to the ministry of the band over many years, because they don't just limit it to the recent catalog. They don't just limit it to John's time with the band. They really do delve into the history of the band, and this album it's a thank you. It does come across as a thank you. It comes across as a decision that the band is saying it is time to hang up the boots. It's time to put the guitar down and put the drumsticks down and to pack the microphones away. And it's time to move on, to retire in essence. And that's how it came across. That's how it was put out there. That's how the band portrayed it. And I'm not saying that, I mean, they've retired because this is the end of the full-time ministry of the band. And I think that's what we need to remember. This is the end of 33 years of full-time ministry. After this, it's no longer the main priority for each of the members of the band.
Before we talk too much more about the actual, putting together of this tour, this album, the concert experience of it all, Dave, I'm curious because I haven't really looked a lot into this yet, but is there much online, is there much in the way of interviews about the decision, about reaching the decision to retire?
Not so much. I think, from what I've read, and I think from what I gathered from our conversations with John and Bob last year, I think part of it tied into the end of the record deal. They come to the end of their contract with Impop, and they made the decision they wanted to do a live album in that sort of form, as a thank you, as a thank you to the fans, as to sort of capture that end. I think the other tie of it comes into the fact that they had been struggling. We've shared before, we've talked before, there'd been a lot of changeover of band members. We shared last episode how Bob had made the decision to rejoin the band on a full-time basis. But you've got to remember, Bob wasn't a young guy at this point. And I strongly suspect that part of that decision to rejoin the band probably came with an understanding between him and John that the full-time schedule would probably only be this album, this tour, and then they're going to move into a more of a part-time or occasional basis ministry. And I think, Bob sort of shared, that, touring is taxing. Touring is quite hard. And I think, Bob had made big commitments to his family. He took some time away from that, but his son was still, going through school at the time. So I believe that that's probably had a lot to do with some of the rationale, probably the decision that they didn't want to go down the track of having to find new members or perhaps put the load on someone else. So I think that's where it was. And that idea of going out with a bang, they'd had a, Jekyll and Hyde was well received. It was very well received. And yes, I think that idea of going out with a bang, going out on a high note, probably appealed to them as artists and as musicians and performers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a fair point. And it's, when you think about it, though, it's a really, really rare story. There are like a lot of performers who like they hit it big and they soar high. A few performers, artists, bow out when they're on top. They climb the mountain and they say, great, I've done what I've set out to do. goodbye, everybody. And they kind of become legendary careers. A very, very incredibly rare few, very rare few artists get to the top and just stay there and maintain an output for the rest of their lives. They are clearly gifted with some supernatural power in what they're doing. But a fairly common story is reaching a height and then something about some of the magic is lost somewhere there. And, subsequent projects or output doesn't capture quite the same energy or vibe or whatever it was that drew people in. And we saw that happening in Petra. It's really, really rare for a band to hit the height, to then dip in their quality a bit, but then really make a genuine comeback. That recaptures and revitalizes the fan base they have and also appeals to new fans. And that's what Jekyll and Hyde did. That's a really special album for that reason.
It is. And I think I want to be careful what I say here, and I don't want to in any way diminish the impact that the various members of the band had over the years, but there's been a very clear correlation as we've done this journey from how things seemed to go once Bob left the band on a full-time basis, and then as his role in the recordings was lessened, and how those albums were received, and then the impact his return had, and more importantly, the impact it had when he wrote the album and wrote the music. I think it really reflects very much how we've talked before about how Bob Hartman is the heart and soul, the heartbeat of this band, and the fans. I think that's a view that the fans have, that it's not saying Bob Hartman is Petra, because I don't want to go that far, but Petra without Bob Hartman is not Petra. And I think that's what we've seen on this journey, and the return of Bob to the full-time role, to the recording, to the writing and recording, that I think had a massive impact, because it felt like Petra again. And this tour really, there's something about the way Bob plays the songs, and it sounds like this is the Petra we love, as opposed to the years where there were other guitarists touring with the band who were playing the songs, but it didn't sound the same. It sounded like someone playing covers of Petra songs, as opposed to sounding like the song. And that's what I think Bob brings to the dynamic, and why this tour, the Jekyll and Hyde tour leading into the Farewell tour, was such a success, and why this Farewell album is well regarded and liked as well.
No, I agree. Now we've got a bit of a personal connection to this album of a sort, not necessarily this recording, but certainly this tour. David, this was it was your second opportunity in life, but it was my first opportunity to actually see Petra play live. They came to Australia for the first time in decades to the Toowoomba Gospel Music Festival, and
Easter 2005.
2005.
April 2005. Yeah.
We got tickets with your then brother-in-law. And we drove from Sydney to Queensland in one hit, went out to the festival, which is a weekend-long thing with heaps of bands and various acts. We went out with about an hour and a half to spare before Petra's set, and then left as soon as we had met them afterwards and you gotten a bunch of stuff autographed. We were not interested in the festival. in the slightest. We were there for Petra.
That's right. We drove what, 12, 15 hours?
14 hours, David.
14 hours driving to see Petra. Just over a 1 hour concert, lined up to meet the band, back in the car and head home again. It was a great weekend. I loved the experience. I loved the opportunity. The irony of it all is, looking back at the concert, I didn't care. I didn't even know who else was playing. The irony of it all is, the same festival also featured Newsboys the following day.
Oh, really?
Yes, Newsboys played the following day in what was, sort of the back end as Peter Furler was preparing to as they started to consider making changes. So
just before
it was,
Paul Coleman took over as lead singer.
No, not Paul Coleman. Paul Coleman played guitars. Michael Tate took over as lead singer.
Oh, I thought Coleman was singing.
No, Coleman did backing vocals. But either way, look, Newsboys played the following day, but we weren't there. We just went for Petra. That's all. We paid a day pass to see Petra and loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was a great, great experience. It was a fantastic concert. It was the sound was great. It was a really enjoyable time.
It was. This album reminds me of a few of the weird little niggles that I had about that experience. But certainly having done this project and this podcast, it also helps me to reconcile that a little bit more. And there was the thing at the time of the sense that I had of, while I was excited to see Bob and John, I didn't care about Greg or Paul at that time at all. And that carried for a while. Unfairly, there was an element to which I always regarded them as the two hired guns. They're the two session musos that are being used to fill out a band. Listening to this album again and watching the concert footage, I feel a bit ashamed for ever thinking that. Especially with regard to Greg Bailey, because this show and then his subsequent involvement in projects, he is a member of the band. He never came at it as a hired gun. He clearly loves Petra, and they occupy a very soft, an important part of his life.
Absolutely, and he is a phenomenal bass player,
yes,
and a phenomenal musician. We're going to talk about that later on this album because it's not just the bass. He is a sensational minute and a fantastic addition to the band. I think he brings a lot to the band. And like you said, and Paul Simmons was very different to Louis Weaver.
Yes,
and while Paul is no longer a part of the ministry. He moved on after the farewell tour finished. And as I said, the band were retiring. So he's probably moved on to other, he's a younger guy, probably moving on to other ministry work and other, artistic opportunities. But he brought something different to the band as well. His style of drumming is very different to Louis. I think he's actually got a bit more of a, I think it's a bit of a metal background. He came from some of his background as a drummer. So he certainly brings a bit more pace and a bit more liveliness to what he can do when he's playing. So yeah, they were, I think I agree with you. I've come to have a lot more respect for them as well, because at the time didn't really know who they were, and they hadn't toured Australia in so long that when we met them, it did feel like that. Are we just meeting some session musos and not realizing what role they were playing in the band?
Mm-hmm. But it also ties into the other aspect of all of this, which is just a reality that you've got to grapple with. Listening to, you know, classic Petra, what we might call standards, if we had, you know, seen a lot of the band back in the day, but classic songs that don't quite sound the same. There's something that is unfamiliar about them. Now, that is naturally a function of going from a five-piece band that heavily integrates electronic and synthesizer sound into the rock music to a four-piece where, no, you've got a bass and a guitar. They're giving you your chorus and your lead, and that's it. Naturally, the songs are going to end up sounding at least a bit different, and they do. I started to really notice this time around, like, the thing of, you know, some of the intros to songs that sounded a little barer than what I'm remembering from the albums. I'm like, gosh, that's how much the keys were bringing, you know, particularly through the years when they had John and John, the two Johns in there at their various times. But so to set that up front, like, if you're going to talk about anything kind of being a criticism or a negative or a less than ideal, all of those are not the right word that I want to use, because I don't want to be negative about the album. And these things, I don't feel, they don't spoil or ruin anything for me. But it is just a difference that you've got to be ready to accept and be real with. And that's not to mention the fact that, as you said, this is Bob at 60 plus years old.
50, I think I worked it out. When they recorded, he was about 55.
55 rather than, you know, 21 or you know, whatever around when he started. You know, I don't have the energy now that I had 5 years ago, let alone 30. So all these kind of factors that are going to come in together that affect the composition of each piece.
I think, you know, there are going to be differences when you don't have the keyboards anymore playing some of these songs from the catalog. And I think what we hear in this album is ways in which they've adapted some of these songs to fit that image and fit that style. And in some cases, it's amazing what they've done is absolutely sensational, and really brings something different to it, as we'll talk about as we go. And in other cases, you know, you sit there and go, oh, you know, I can see what they've done there. I might prefer it with the keyboards, but I don't have it. And then, of course, you know, we're talking about this farewell concert, which was recorded in October of 2005. So it was recorded. This was recorded at the back end of the tour. It was at this album and the accompanying DVD that went with it. But you know, they've brought in, you know, we get at the back end of the concert, we get that additional stuff when John Lowry makes his appearance, and we hear a couple of songs with the keyboards in there, and you hear how what it brings and how it allows them to explore the music in a different way.
That's right. There is one thing that I really felt I noticed, and I noticed it from the very first song. And I can see a whole bunch of reasons why they might be doing it intentionally. If there is a genuine criticism of this album, it's that the songs feel rushed. You can feel it. They're rushing. They're playing it faster than their album recordings. And you can hear it in John Schlitt's voice. He's panting. He's struggling to keep up some of the time. And now I can certainly understand you've got a thing of like you're putting on a huge celebration tour and a thank you to the fans. You've got a lot of catalog that you want to pay homage to and a lot you want to get through, but you are not a stadium headlining band anymore. So the venues that you book are not going to allow you endless time in your evenings to play as long as you want to. There are going to be time limitations that they've just got to deal with, and that's a reality. So I can understand sort of saying, we're gonna put all these songs in, we'll do some medley versions so that we can at least get a bit of the song in there, and we'll play some of them fast so that we don't exceed our time.
I think there's a couple of songs that it's really noticeable in, and obviously we'll talk about that soon. There are a couple of songs. Some of the songs I actually went back and compared, listened to them, you know, almost next to each other, like one and then the other, and some more highlighting that the songs off the Jekyll and Hyde album are pretty well played at the same pace that they were on Jekyll and Hyde, but certainly in the there are other songs that you can feel the speed being pushed, and part of that, you know, like you said, is probably wanting to get as much in as they can to you know, when you've got 33 years of history, when you've got all these albums and all these songs over time and so many of them loved by the fans, you want to get in as many as you can. You've got to do that. And I think the bigger element is obviously when you're playing medleys, part of what you need is you don't want the drummer to be consistently changing time and beat speed during a medley because that can have an impact on that timekeeping feel. And so certain songs are going to have to be played at maybe a slightly quicker pace to match the other songs that they've been put in this medley with.
Yeah. No, and that's true. And it's, you know, I mean, you know, part of the great strength of Bob and the band as sort of as composers, as arrangers of music is the way that they put these medleys together, and particularly this one where these are extended medleys, you know. Taking it from the top.
Well, just before we do, we mentioned one person who returns, and obviously everyone knows there are two former members who return live on the album in John Laurie and Greg Exwells, and we'll get to them. But we've got the return of another member behind the scenes, because one of the project coordinator is none other than Jim Cooper, the man who replaced John Laurie on the keyboards.
Yep, that is true. Obviously, a guy who feels more comfortable in a behind the scenes, in a production capacity, and good on him for that. It's the one thing that. I do not particularly like the concert video of this. That's a film direction criticism, though. I think they do a pretty amazing job at trying to capture the vibe and the sound. And they've got good interaction as much as they can with the members of the band. They were clearly limited in where they were able to place their cameras, but it wasn't a very big venue. There are a lot of long shots where it's like, okay, you weren't able to actually get a lot of shots that were done by Zoom, and you can tell that Sam. It's the editing of it though that really irritates me. It's the worst excesses of you get it in Hillsong, or you used to get it in Hillsong and other big Christian music productions where you're cutting a shot every 2 seconds. It actually becomes very disorienting and it doesn't allow you to connect with anything you're seeing happening on screen. It's just this churn of image. Would have been, and I know, like the aspect of involving someone to do a video production for you is in itself a whole ordeal. I wish it had been part of Jim Cooper's purview in putting this. I mean, he's doing aspects of the tour and the recording and the production to make that sound good. Would have loved it if he could have worked into his thing, better placement of cameras and interactions with the guys using them, because it is an element of you know, as a historical record of this. I would have liked something that just allowed me to sit a bit closer to the band and connect a bit more with them, and kind of what they were feeling as a, because that's really what gets lost in all the flurry of editing and the focus exclusively on John and Bob.
Yeah.
Paul barely gets a look in at all. Greg gets some stuff only because he's in front of the drums.
Yeah.
So,
and talking about Paul not getting a look in, you have to feel sorry. You know, it's well known this Farewell album and the accompanying DVD, there are a couple of things that were left off. Two of the songs that were recorded and not included on the album, we'll be talking about next episode, because Judas Kiss and Lord I Lift Your Name on High were recorded, but were not included on the album due to, I think, the sort of time restraints that you have available with CD, how much, yeah, what you can put on a CD and stuff like that. But unfortunately, the other thing that got cut from the album is the drum solo.
Yeah.
Now, the story goes, it's pretty well known that during the recording, Bob broke a guitar string and had to restring his guitar. And at that moment, Paul did a drum solo, which those that were there live, I've read online, I've read on forums and stuff, those that were there live say it was absolutely sensational. One of the best drum solos that you will ever hear. It's just absolutely brilliant. Fortunately, because it wasn't a planned part of the concert, the way the drums were mic'd, they weren't able to get a clean recording cut of the drum solo and therefore weren't able to include it. It's not something that they were able to reproduce. Whereas Bob's guitar solo is like, it's something that he has worked on and developed, and you hear the same solo at multiple concerts. And the concert we were at, it was the same solo that he played later in the year when they recorded it. That doesn't tend to happen with drum solos. You can't plan it that way. And so they didn't get the recording, and we don't get Paul's drum solo on the album, which would have been great if we could have. It would have been fun.
It would have been. Interestingly though, like, and yes, like Bob's got a solo as kind of a special moment that he has in the whole album. But I do note, and this is the thing about, you know, throughout the individual songs, lack of solos in places where the songs used to have solos. We commented on the Jekyll and Hyde album that it was interestingly devoid of solos in the songs, which was a little bit different. But here, and again, I would assume it to be a function of we kind of need to shave seconds everywhere we can to fit everything into the concert time slots that we have. So taking you know, the solos out of songs like Dance or Creed, even Grave Robber. So yeah, it's something that's kind of common across across the thing. But yeah, a shame that Paul doesn't have kind of that moment.
But the one thing I did like is when we saw them play live, we did get to see Paul do a drum solo as part of that concert.
Yep. No, that's very true.
And it got a very good reaction.
Yeah, he rocks. Yeah, he absolutely rocks.
Well, talking about rocking and things rocking, I think it's time to start having a look through the songs that are on this concert, this farewell concert.
Absolutely. Kicking off with one of the new ones, which you know, is fairly common ground when you've got a legacy tour. You know, the band starts playing stuff from their most recent album, which isn't quite what's going to happen with this album, but All About Who You Know. And this is I Know, because like first off the rank, Rushing, Just a Hair, but kind of setting that pace is like this concert's going to be a race, a race through these songs, guys. You know, enjoy it while we're here, but it's not going to last very long.
One of the things I noticed, and I'll make this comment again a little bit later on. One of the things that really stood out to me in this version of All About Who You Know compared to the studio recording that we listened to last episode is that the drums, Paul brings a lot more personality.
Yes.
Brings a lot more personality to the song. A lot of little mini fills and little extra bits that it's not just a straight backing drum. Paul is bringing himself to the band and bringing what he's been given the opportunity to contribute to the song. And I do like it. I do like what Paul brings to this song.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, you know, it's vibrancy. It's a good starter. It's a good setting the tone for the event. I know not wasting a lot of time on words between songs here.
No, that's probably, I would assume that's probably more editing than anything else. Like, I think that's probably part of the edit. Again, needing to get as much as you can in and not having the fluff in between. But I do like how they finish the song with the breakdown to basically just the vocals to end it off. I thought that was a nice way to do it. Just again, a little bit of variation to what was on the studio version.
But we roll into Dance, which, yeah, is an interesting choice. I guess there's, you know, if you're going to go with stuff from Unseen Power, there aren't a lot that, you know, apart from Sight Unseen, Sight Unseen and Dance. But again, interesting that you put a song like that, you know, so near the front of the list.
When you look through concert listings over time, Dance was one of those songs that became one of the concert staples. It was in most of their tours, most of their concerts. I guess, you know, outside of the message elements of the various songs, I guess that concept, when you're talking about a live performance and you have a song Dance and you've got that bit in the middle where they go dance, 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 dance with the one brain. I guess it's an encouragement for the fans who are there to dance, to get up, to bounce along, to get up. So I wonder if this is more a song that, while the nature of the song written is not about, you know, interaction fan with the band. I wonder if that's part of why a song like this was kept in, and maybe why so early in the concert is that that push for, come on, guys, you're here, join us, dance. Let's, you know, even the way he introduced it, I feel like dancing. You know, yeah, it's that encouragement to get the interaction with the audience. And I think that's why this song was included, to allow that, to encourage that from those listening and those there live.
Yeah, yeah. This is one, though, I do note, you can hear that the toll that time has taken on John Schlitt's voice. He's, and look, as you said, near the end of the of this concert tour, so that could be actually an element as well. It could be just the tiredness and exhaustion that comes at that point. But there's a hoarseness to his, you can hear it, a hoarseness to his voice, and he's not quite sustaining those long high notes. He can hit the note, but he's just not holding them as long. Again, you know, that's, you don't want to make that a be like a criticism, as such. Just you can hear it. But what I actually feel, and this is, it's the argument that people sort of have about, you know, why they like listening to stuff on vinyl rather than, you know, digital tracks, which are pristine and pure and perfectly edited. There's actually something about perceiving the imperfections as you enjoy something that connects you to it deeply. And this element is actually something that, you know, auditorily helps you connect with the band and the moment and the reality of it, rooted in a time, and in an emotional moment. So that imperfection of John's actually is a benefit to the listener.
Yeah.
All right, well, to this listener anyway.
Yeah. Another thing that I find is a benefit is, again, some of the variations that they bring into this. In the second verse, you get this, during a couple of lines of the second verse, you get this syncopated drum roll coming from Paul. Very, very different, very unique to a different element to the song, which I quite like that. And then at the back end of the song, they move into this guitar slide and double time and really start to drive it to finish it off. It has a real push. I actually prefer this live version of the song over the original version of Unseen Power. That's my preference. Okay. It might not be everyone's preference, but I prefer it probably for some of those elements that are there. And that thing that they bring in, it's we mentioned it on the studio version. You can hear the dance, 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 dance with the one who brung you underneath the song, but it's not a prominent element in the studio version, where here it's a breakdown element. They break it down to that and push it as a major element of the song before you get that guitar slide and that double time feel and to finish the song off.
Mm. Now, did Petra tour Revival at all?
They did tour in the US, yes.
US, okay. Because I'm interested in the inclusion of the Amazing Grace. This was a Matt Redman arrangement, is that right?
I can't remember who we said it. No, it wasn't Redman.
Hold on.
Thadler Hartley and Dwayne Laring.
Oh, okay.
John Hartley, Gary Sadler, and Dwayne Laring.
Okay. All right. So people that I don't know. Fair enough. Okay. Well, yeah. Interesting choice. It's, you know, not even on that album, that was not particularly a track that resonated with me. But it clearly does with John and Bob. So,
and I wonder if this was included as part of that that recency, that they wanted to bring something off, probably wanted to bring something off Revival, and as it had been the release before Jekyll and Hyde, and so maybe this was part of the reason for having this song on the concert, is they wanted something off Revival, and maybe this is the song that John and Bob just maybe the historical the connection to a great hymn of history being done in a different way, maybe that's where it's coming from, that brings back to their heritage and their roots of faith.
I can see that. How the only thing that I'm going to say is, like, it does seem, and look, I know this album, Lord, I Lift Your Name on High was one of the songs on the tour, and it wasn't captured for this album, but it seems a bit nuts to me that of all of their praise and worship albums that they did, they do a song that they did from Revival, they do a song that they did from Petra Praise 2, they do nothing from the original Petra Praise.
That's like, true.
I mean, they're hands down most successful album of all time. Like, you look at the figures, and Petra Praise is more successful than Beyond Belief. It was the more widespread. It was the bigger bomb. Bomb in an explosive, amazing way.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
And maybe part of the element of that is not having John Lowry on the keyboards as the full time role, because I think, you know, when you go back and listen to that album, it really was a full band album. A lot of keyboard work in the songs, and maybe they found it harder to transition that sound to just the four piece, and maybe that's why we don't get anything from that album.
Possibly. But we're back to Jekyll and Hyde at number four, Test of Time.
Oh yeah.
Now this, I admit, this is I'd be hard pressed to feel like it. I don't know that it feels necessarily as though it's rushing a lot compared to the album. I think
this one is dead to time. Okay. I've put them side by side.
What I'm hearing then is an upper middle-aged man who is a little out of breath then. which is fun. And look, and again, the one thing that you do capture when you do get John's face and you're looking at the concert footage, he's clearly having a great time with this. John Schlick clearly loved the Jekyll and Hyde stuff.
Mm.
I mean, I'm sure they all did, but he is so happy to be doing this song. And I really I just really note that the way that they've got the guys doing, you know, Bob and Greg doing sort of that backing or that chorus vocal.
That mantra.
The mantra. I mean, I don't know, maybe Paul was mic'd as well. I don't know. Mm. But it feeds really, really well into that vibe and that moment. It's it's a really great rendition.
Yeah, look, I really enjoy it. One of the things I noted here, this live version has a little more life to it. Again, coming out of the drums, and I think the mantra and stuff like that, a little less polish, and John's vocals. The one thing that really stood out to me listening to this, and this is probably one of my biggest criticisms of this concert album, is that you can hear that you can clearly hear in this song that there is either a supporting track playing with them, or they go into the studio and do some extra work on this afterwards, because you can hear some lead guitars, you can hear some extra elements of this song that would not have been possible to be played live. A few of the songs, whether it be some form of support track that is clearly audible, or whether they've gone into the studio later and polished it up and refined it a little bit and done some extra work on it. It's something that it's very clear in this song. Having said that, what I really like in this song, we were very critical. I don't know if that's the right word, but we certainly harped on last episode about the lack of solos and guitar solos in the Jekyll and Hyde songs. What I really liked is during the vocal mantra of this song, Bob was playing a guitar solo underneath it. And it's a guitar solo that isn't prominent on the studio version of the song.
Yeah.
Which makes me think it was probably the solo that went with it, but he found a way to incorporate it into this live version. And I really loved it. It was really, really good sound and really good work.
Yeah. I think, it's fairly common for backing tracks to be used, even with bands to fill out, in the end, it's about making the song more familiar to the people who know the studio version, and a way of just filling out. There was programming and synth work done on Jekyll and Hyde album, not as prominent as Petra's history, but it's still there. It still lends something of an atmosphere, it's fairly common. That's not something that's taken away sort of any enjoyment for me, like, out of it. It's like, I appreciate you're putting the thing there, you're filling out the sound a little bit more. And look, the fact that you've got that going there, along during that mantra, means Bob can do his solo. Like, some of that backing work, track is holding up the chorus, and he can let it shred a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not knocking that at all, and I enjoy it. As I said, I really enjoy this version. I feel it's got a little more life to it. And that support stuff allows them to bring that extra life to the song, which I think is a really good thing. We'll probably talk about this at the end, but I think when I think of a live album, I guess I'm wanting I want the live experience, and I feel that by adding, whether it be post-production work or that backing track element, I just feel it takes away a little bit from the live experience, because we didn't, they definitely weren't using a backing track when we saw them live in Australia.
That's true. It was very bare bones with what they had.
Mm. And so that's the only thing. I think of a live experience that to me, it's not quite the full live experience.
But I mean, so interestingly though, like the follow-up song Creed here, something that, very, very distinctly has that opening from the Beyond Belief album, the kind of thing that you could really benefit from using a backing track for, but they don't. No, Bob has worked out his own introduction to the song, like he and Greg doing an intro to this song, which and I think the thing that strikes me about it that I think is remarkable, again a testament to him as an arranger, is that it's unmistakably Creed. Like, he starts playing it, and if you weren't looking at the title of the track on your CD player, you're like, oh, this is Creed. Even though, it's totally unfamiliar introduction, but it's unmistakable. And I like that a lot. And I'm not surprised to see that sort of at such a high spot, and is one of the full songs that they're giving space to on this tour as well.
Yeah, again, another song that was a staple of pretty well every concert after the Beyond Belief album. It was always, I mean, it's their creed. It is what they believe. It is who they are as a band. I think it's always been something that they've wanted to use and proclaim since it was recorded. This is one song you mentioned earlier about how a lot of the songs can come across quicker. This is one song that is clearly played much faster than the studio version. And it's interesting to note that the drive comes quite early. Paul Simmons starts to pick it up and almost feels like he picks the tempo up as he does and drives the pace a little bit more from where it started at.
Yeah. It's always the drummer, man. Those guys, if you don't keep them on a leash. Now, talking, I don't know how you feel place. About it. Right place. I'm like, you're going to take like the two songs off No Doubt that I think are probably the kinds of songs you want to include in your live. Like they do them, but they do them truncated versions as part of the medleys. Of all the songs off No Doubt that you're going to choose to do in full, I don't know, like, again, is Right Place, was that a staple of concerts from that era? Is that something that just took, you know?
I don't know about that. What I can say is this song really allows Bob Hartman's guitar playing to shine, and Greg Bailey. Like this song really allows the musicians to shine. And this is a guitar driven, very technical song. And the pace they play it at, I think it really, it might be more about, hey guys, this is how talented our musicians actually are. Bob is 55, 56 years old, and he can still go listen to this. Bang. Like he's going for it. And it's quicker than the original.
Yes, they've upped the tempo on that one.
And there's some really cool that you actually get a guitar solo and a bass. There's a bass solo in there too.
Yes.
And I just think I think I noted it's a shame we didn't get a drummer solo with it. It would have been a great spot if we got the other two there. But I wonder if that's where this song is it's what it allows the Bob and Greg to do musically. The one thing I'm really impressed with this song and the speed they sing it at is that John remembered the lyrics. I think I shared when we did the studio version how there is a recording out there of a concert tour that where they sing this song and John forgets the words to the song and talks about it while the song's still being played. At least John remembered the lyrics.
Yes, very true. But now we get a very brief address from Bob, which, yes, I do suspect might have been longer live. But, you know, essentially this is the part where we sort of say, okay, guys, we're going old school. We're going to do some of the old songs. We know you love them. And they launch into the rock medley. And, you know, from our reflections on Captured in Time and Space, we love the medleys they put together for that. And it's been a staple of the band from the beginning. Bob said in your interview with him how it was a purpose of saying, look, we want to give the people the songs that they want to hear, the stuff that they like. And this is a way to just be able to do more of that. And again, to sort of say, all right, we're going to do some epic medleys now, rather than two or three together. We're running, what have I got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of their songs together. And it's, It's a really good spread from across a number of their most prominent albums historically.
Well,
and
taking
their great
that
choice and their great choices from those albums.
Oh yeah. Well, you with the exception of the albums that Bob was not part of the recording process, so God, Fixation and Double Take, and leaving out the Praise albums, there is essentially a song from just about every album that John Schlitt has done except Back to the Street.
Yes. Is that right? Yes, there is. And we're also throwing It Is Finished.
I know. And I think that was an awesome addition.
Which is probably, you know, you talk about the transitions between songs and how you got to do a bit of rearrangement. But that is possibly one of the greatest transitions. Like the intro to Sight Unseen is an iconic
one. It was
you love
so
to hear
good.
It. I was out like listening to this on my headphones, walking the dogs, and I wanted to start stepping in time, banging my head wildly as it was going. And again, and it's got that thing, and it's built in to kind of have a similar outro as the song. You have that real dun, 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 at the end. For them to roll that into the beat, for Paul just to keep that boom, that perfect rhythm going, and to get straight into It Is Finished. Push.
It's fantastic. And I love the mind. I love John singing this song. It is, I mean, this is an iconic song. We've shared this before. Currently, this song is sitting at number two on our Greg X Vols list. Right? It Is Finished is number two on our Greg X Vols list. So we love this song. John brings an element to this song with his vocal style, with that rock style that he brings, that just takes, you know, we only get a portion of that song, that first verse and chorus, but gee, it suits his voice.
It's perfectly suited to him. I have long thought there is a version of this song out there. Whenever John feels like he's got the strength to do this, you hook him up with a Christian metal group, maybe even a Christian black metal group that's out there somewhere. There's a version of this that is insanely heavy and brutal and over the top and I think it would absolutely be brilliant. But yeah, you know, the through line of this medley is that kind of constant driving that Paul's doing so much work on this. But again, It Is Finished. It really rolls well into the beat and the rhythm of Think Twice. Although, again, we've clearly got the backing track being used at the intro to this song, because
you can hear this, you can hear the effects on the drum, on the drum work. And that's where I was talking about before. But I mean, I guess that the affected drums, I mean, that's part of what makes that the intro to that song so well known.
Yes. Yeah. It is. But I can remember now, did they do this medley for us in Toowoomba?
Yes, okay. They did.
Okay. It was. I couldn't quite remember, but of what I remember was the absolute elation that I felt the moment that obviously what was happening was Think Twice transitioned out and transitioned in to that riff from I Am on the Rock. My heart soared upon hearing that live, and it did it again here. This is a magic song. I mean, look, we spent, I think, 3.5 hours with Ron Rockstar raving about this album. I Am on the Rock is my favorite song off this album. And
I Am on the Rock is currently sitting in our number one all-time song spot for this band.
It's just, oh gosh, it's magnificent. Anyway, yeah, so...
And the intro, it sounds as crisp on this album as the first time you hear it at the beginning of, on the studio version. It's Bobby's just awesome. He plays this so well. The one element of this that I prefer the studio version over this, and that, and it's only because it's live on a smaller scale, is the backing vocals aren't quite as strong as what you get in the studio version of the I Am on the Rock line. But that's not to diminish what's being brought
it
here.
It doesn't. And again, that's an element almost, because at this point in the album, I'm on board with the journey of it. Mm. And yeah, you know, there's that, it's one of the differences that you can hear in that. But it's also, you know, sort of the imperfections that bring home the reality of what you're listening to. And it's the kind of thing again that raises my estimation of Greg Bailey, is like seeing him engage in that backing vocals and the harmonies. And they really do it well. And then into the riff from Midnight Oil, like a perfect two pieces of Lego fitting together.
Yeah.
You know, and what else could you do from that album?
Oh, this song had to be on there. This is fantastic. And like you said, they just go so well together because they've both got those iconic guitar riff intros that just, you know, you just love to hear and you love what's being brought to the table. And just to continue pace, like we're talking about what Paul's bringing behind it, during this, he gets the double kick drum going on this song, and it really brings something to life.
Yeah. Now, rolling into it, took me a moment to place Minefield the first time that I was listening to this medley. I was kind of like listening to the song going, What's this one? Hey, is this Minefield? Is this Minefield? And then we get to, it's a minefield. Okay, it was Minefield. And it's, on the one hand, there's a part of me that's like, that's an odd choice from On Fire. I mean, you want something from On Fire, but if you're going to get something from On Fire, don't you want All Fired Up if you're going to choose one? But rhythmically, All Fired Up does not fit into this rock set. Minefield is the one that slots in naturally. So,
and it also, I think it also gives Bob a moment to just relax his fingers from all that lead work he's been doing.
And it's not that, you know, Minefield's not a bad song. It's you know, as we haven't said it as much recently, but you know, this is Petra. They don't do bad songs. The songs that we don't like as much as their best songs are still better than 98% of music that you'll hear.
The one thing I felt was missing, though, unfortunately, because it is a medley, what we're missing is that scream, that John Schlitt scream at the beginning that you don't get it in the medley, which is a shame. I would have loved to hear him try to pump it out.
Given how he's doing in this album, David, I don't know that we would have gotten much out of him. But we launch, we crescendo into possibly the all-timer for Petra, like the song that is most identified with them, no matter where you are in the world. And a good rendition of it too. Paul does Louis proud on This Means War.
Oh yeah,
it really does.
Very, very good adaptation by Paul Simmons of the drum work. I was really impressed because it's such a unique introduction and probably very difficult to do live, but Paul has adapted it very well to fit into what they're doing for the medley. And again, now you've got a different element intro into the medley because we've had all these guitar lead-ins, but now we've backed it off to our second drum intro. But such a, the moment you heard it, even though it's not exactly the same, the moment you heard it, you knew what was coming.
That's exactly it. And we do a reprise, or they do a reprise of It Is Finished at the end there, which, again, a natural Lego fit with This Means War. It's astounding to me that I'd never thought of it previously. I don't know about you, Dave, but come the end or the outro of It Is Finished, I got chills listening to Bob and Greg.
Oh, I know.
John Lowry's outro.
I know. It is just, this, the word awesome is thrown around way too much. I use it way too much.
You do.
This is awesome on awesome.
Yes.
This outro, that guitar, when you first hear it, you're hearing the and you think, oh, yeah, I see. And then the bass comes in and you're like, oh, my goodness, that is brilliant. Yeah. That is
amazing bass work.
And then they're going off each other. They're actually playing like a bit each, you know, Bob goes, Greg goes, Bob goes, Greg goes. He's like, this is sensational. Like it doesn't miss anything. It is note for note.
It is
the keyboard outro from the song done with a bass and guitar. And this, it just highlights how talented Greg Bailey, where we talked about what Greg Bailey brings to the band. This really highlights that talent in that moment.
Again, like separate to how good he is a musician, it's also the thing that really, that finally kind of made me connect him like in an emotional way with the legacy and the history of the band. Because he's extending his hand back and connecting with something that goes all the way back in the band's history. And anyway, what a rock medley. After that, you think it's time to just pull up a pew, take a breather for a second, but no, we are doing the headline and song from the most recent album, Jekyll and Hyde. Am I, again, problems with the cinematography on the live footage, because I can't actually be sure what I'm looking at. But has John got his back to the audience initially, is the song starting up?
Or, I think he does.
I think he does. Yeah. Arms kind of raised.
Arms up, yeah. And then the fist starts going. And the
fist start pumping. And he's got that really awkward dad dance that he does when he's really getting but yeah, Jekyll and Hyde. We just got through talking about this with Wild Man and Steve. There's not a lot new to bring to it. This is beat for beat the album, just done with Cheers in the background.
Yeah, and the big difference with one distinct difference, and that is Paul Simmons brings so much life on the drums, little fills, little extra elements that I actually think add to the studio recording. I feel this is a better version of Jekyll and Hyde than the studio version that we got last out, because we don't miss any of the rock feel, we don't miss any of the drive, but we get a little bit extra. And it's just, this is just sensational. And a great way, like you said, a great way coming out of the rock medley into what is probably the rockiest song they've done in years.
They ever did. Well, I mean, it might well be the hardest edge song they have
ever done.
Period.
Yeah. In
their entire catalog. Question, just side question. How much would you pay for a remaster of Jekyll and Hyde with Paul Simmons?
Oh, that would be, I think, yeah. Bring it on.
Yep.
Yeah, bring it on. A lot.
Okay, cool. All right, well, now we're gonna pull up that chair. All right, so we got the old guys on the stage are probably breathing a sigh of relief. We get to pull up the stools and sit down for a moment. Bob puts aside his electric guitar, picks up the old acoustic. Everyone's taking it easy. Greg Bailey whipping out the double bass and bow, buddy. That's for an acoustic set.
And John introduces his hero. Now, I will admit, when I first heard this album, I thought, you know, it's probably just something that you say. Like, what does that really mean? But when we did our interview with John last year, it really came out how much he did listen to Petra and how much, like, and then there's the interview that goes with this, the DVD, where John basically talks about the fact that when he was working in some mines or whatever for a while, and to drive there and drive back, he only had two Christian albums at the time, More Power to You and Never Say, and I think he said it was Never Say Die, Wash Away. Basically, he had two Petra albums, and he just listened to them over and over and over. And then it highlighted to me when I've heard those interviews, I've realized the role that Greg played in John's early Christian development and musical level. And so hearing him say, Greg is my hero, you're sitting there going, you're probably right. John was looked up to Petra and looked up to Greg X. Voles as a vocalist for many years before he joined the band himself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that certainly had a bigger impact now that I know more of the history of it.
Yeah. I think this is a very poignant set and a very poignant historic moment for the band. It's a moment where, look, I mean, Christian music is not immune to the curse of ego, like any music. It's there, and there are Christian bands that have completely fallen apart because of it, and there are ones that have managed to keep going, but you know that ego is a problem for people, and there are conflicts and tensions and stuff. And not that I've ever heard of anything like that actually being really at issue in amongst Petra in their iterations. But this whole thing is one where you can see just a bunch of men without ego on the stage together. And it's present in the fact that John is easily willing to sit down and sing backing vocals in what is ostensibly his concert. He sings backing vocals to his guest, who is going to do these songs greater justice or however, whatever the framing. He happily, because he clearly is happily doing it. He's loving doing it. Backing vocals as Greg leads. But then on that same note, Greg, for a couple of the songs, pulls back and he's like, John, this is yours. Yeah. Not that interaction was happening on stage. They'd obviously planned it, but it was just this. And I guess what it highlights is the thing that came really clear listening to your interview with John that had never really twigged me before. The fact that the guys in it view Petra as a ministry first. The band is an element that is a vehicle that carries the ministry. And this was a moment they were just ministering to one another, to the fans, to the people. It's beautiful. It makes me cry. Okay, I'm gonna be on. I will admit it to everybody on this broadcast. This set makes me cry.
Mm.
It is so beautiful. Again, even in its roughness and its imperfection in places. But it is a perfect mellow medley set or acoustic mellow medley set. Rose Colored Stained Glass Windows is one of your all-time favorites, isn't it, Dave?
It's one of my all-time favorite songs, and I love how they vary it up because it's usually done much harder, much rockier. There's an acoustic element to the beginning of the song, and then it goes into the stronger riff played on an electric guitar. But here you have the riff being played on the cello. And it's just done so well. And Bob just sits back and basically he allows Greg to be highlighted with that cello playing, and Bob's just playing the picking underneath while Greg is almost the showcase piece of that little part to it. Now we talked before about things being done quick. This one's done a little bit slower.
Yeah.
To fit with the acoustic feel of the rest of the medley.
Yeah. No, that's right. But which is good because we go into one of the most meditative of all of the Greg X Vols era songs, Road to Zion, which I've always adored. Any song that I kind of learned to play and sing myself somewhere holds a particularly special place for me, and this is one of them. It's a song that simultaneously acknowledges the difficulties of the journey and the darkness of the journey, but also points to the ultimate hope. And you hear that in their voices as they're singing.
And I think this song really epitomizes what you're saying before about the harmony. Like you can really hear John just coming in underneath with that harmony, but allowing Greg to sort of have that strong lead element. It doesn't what John is doing is not taking away from what Greg is doing. It's actually adding to it.
Yeah. No, that's right. Mm. It's almost like, particularly with Road to Zion, John is perfectly suited to the harmonies of that song, the higher harmony that he sings.
Yeah.
Into I Have Made No Secret in the Past of How Much More Power To You means to me personally. Mm. So, you know, by the time we reach this song, I'm a weeping mess. I love it. I just so love hearing them do this.
I noted here, like you can actually hear the bongos, but Paul playing the bongos and the cello work is just amazing. But Greg's vocals, I just made a note when I was preparing that with this song, Greg has not missed a beat.
No.
I'll have something to say about Greg's vocals when we get to a later song. But with this song, you're just sitting here going, "This is Greg." Like. It you could have been listening to Greg back on the Captured in Time and Space tour. He did not miss a beat with this song.
Yeah. The next installment is again one that I've talked about my complicated feelings for before. For any interesting choice, I don't know that I would have naturally pegged it.
I think this possibly ties into some of the stuff we've shared before about the meaning it had at the time, the role the song played at the time of pushing messages. And it certainly in the early days, like when it was recorded for Never Say Die, Bob's talked about how impactful the song was for so many people. And I think it was brought in as sort of that, we're going down this tour of, yeah, this is who we've been as a ministry, and I wonder if that's where we come from. That this is like that early song that had an impact in a different way, and for Bob, I think for Bob and for Greg, it was like we need to include this song because of the role it played in the ministry at the time.
Yeah, possibly.
It's interesting that they really edit the song. It's a much shortened verse, and they only do the final chorus. So it's not what they've done. Almost every other song, you get the first verse and chorus of a song. Well, but with Ferrani, you get an edited first verse and the final chorus.
Yeah. Well, I mean, which I understand, it makes sense. It's hard when you a song that tells a story to then bring that into a medley. You don't want to do the chorus that's meant to make you cry tears of depression. You want the chorus that implores you to be part of the solution kind of thing. Times past, I might have expressed a little bit of the same kind of confusion about the next song being included. Although it's lovely that the way, Greg just simply melts back into his chair and allows John just to step up to take over for No Doubt. However, having listened to Bob talk about No Doubt and the way people have continually come up to him about this song being something that's been important and meaningful for them, is the recurrent like those songs of that Bob's written that seem particularly powerful are the ones that it's about. Hold on to your hope. And No Doubt is another one of those songs, partners well with More Power to You, really. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Version to do it acoustically. I like it acoustic. I like hearing this acoustic. I like this better than No Doubt's studio version. I would like to hear a full version of the song.
It would be nice. I agree with you. I think it really brings a sweetness to the song.
It does. Overjoyed that they decided to get together. We're going to do the coloring song together. Oh, yeah. Makes me happy. Very happy.
I love the cello. The cello work on the coloring song is just amazing. The work that Greg Bailey is doing there. And I really like that Greg X Vols and John Schlitt do the chorus together. It's sort of that coming together of everything. Like they've up till this point, it's been Greg does his, John does his, and they backing, but it's almost like a coming together of both eras of the band when they sing the chorus of the coloring song together.
And that's the sense that I really get, and that's like what's happening in this medley. It is exactly that, this coming together of the eras. And a poignant one to end on as well. Possibly the most prominent mellow or radio friendly song in their catalog, Love.
I don't think they could have done this concert without it, because this is John's hallmark song. We're about to get Greg's hallmark song in a moment. This is John's hallmark song, and you know, to include it in the medley, I think was a really good choice. And we see Greg sharing that final chorus again, the coming together of these two eras of the band.
I totally agree. And Love is a song that it's really all about that first verse and the chorus. The second verse and the bridge. All the work's being done in that intro first. Anyway, so it's one that slots in well here. Whereas Greg's signature song, and that song that really kind of exemplifies his era with the band, Grave Robber, it's the one that you want that whole experience of. And so much do you want that experience of the fullness of that song, you can't do it with a four-piece band. David, you've got to call out the one guy who I think must be literally the best friend of everybody in the world, because he's just always in photos with people with his arm around him and the biggest smile on his face, and he's just always so happy to be around. John Lowry's brought out to play keys for Grave Robber, and he'll spin it into one of his patented solos. Wonderful to see him. And this is a song, I admit, this is one that it was instantly, this feels completely and utterly familiar. This, you know, this could have been an alternate take from Captured in Time and Space.
Yeah, it definitely feels familiar. There's a couple of things that really stand out, though. Number one, it is definitely quicker than Captured in Time and Space. It does feel at times like it's racing a little bit. I don't know why. I can't understand how that's come about, because there'd be no reason for it. The second thing that's really noticeable, you can this is the song that you can hear that Greg doesn't quite hold the range that he used to.
Yeah.
Greg's age has caught up with him a little bit, because he doesn't hit the notes the way he did in the live version on Captured in Time and Space. And it's very noticeable on this version. I actually think when we get to a later version, I think having worked a bit longer and been able to get back into the swing of things, you hear him able to pick it back up again a little bit on the classic Petra version. But this version, it you can hear he's struggling to hit those higher notes. And I must admit, I really miss... This version highlights how good Mark Kelly's backing vocals were on Captured in Time and Space, because I don't feel the backing is as strong. So I really enjoyed and loved this song. That's been well and truly made known. But this version doesn't quite nail it as well as the previous versions have.
Fair point.
But the heart is there.
The heart
is
there. You
can hear the heart. And you know, you talk about tears for the medley. This is a song that brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing, like, again, you, and I guess just to focus on the album, it feel you're listening to something special. You're listening to a special moment that was captured. Yes.
That's it.
And that's a lovely thing to have and to always be able to hold, and you know, to acknowledge the reality that this was not the end, far, far from being the end of Petra. It was a transition that they weren't sure what the future held, but it what it was and what was is notable about it was the first time that, like, as we've said, the modern era, the current era, reach back and grasp the hand of the older era and was just like, you know what? We have never been, there's never been multiple bands, Petra all across, no matter when we played, no matter who we played with, if we were here, then we are one. We are all one, and we share in this whole thing together. And I'm sure there's some complicated things with that moving forward. But anyway, it's beautiful.
It really feels like, it's this song highlights that they are, it's the band sort of saying, you know, it's not just John and Bob. This band was everyone who's ever been a part of this ministry. And by bringing Greg and John Lowry in to do Grave Robber, which was the hallmark song of the classic Petra version of the band, is a great way to highlight that to everyone that this is, like you said, this is a ministry of all of us, and we are going to do this together. And it's fantastic. This is, as we said, this is the one song that they didn't do on the rest of the tour. This was unique to this concert. And if you were there live, I think it would have been an absolutely magnificent experience.
Then it's demonstrated to us how John Lowry arrived at the concert on this night. Apparently, he stepped out of a time machine from the year 1986 because he's got a keytar strapped around his neck. But he treats the audience like it's called keyboard solo, but we long-time Petra fans all know this as Jesus Loves You.
Jesus Loves You.
I don't know if you picked it up, David. It's not the same recording.
No, he's clearly recorded his
redone it.
Age.
He's
yeah,
redone
his,
it.
His kids are older. His kids are older. He's clearly re-recorded their voices, whether it was for then or if he'd just done it at another time and used that one. But no, it's certainly a deeper sounding Jesus Loves You than the original one.
But look, it's a barrel of fun to be a part of it and to hear it again and to see him doing it. It was a really nice moment to for him to be able to have there. In a show like that. Now I'm a little surprised that the next song is done here and not as the finale. A little surprised.
I think
there was no question that they're going to do Beyond Belief.
Mm.
No question at all. But I really would have thought you end with Beyond Belief.
I think there's two elements to it. I think number one, it allowed them to, again, John Lowry was utilized here. So you had the five piece, you had the fullest sound, and John Lowry doesn't play the final song. So I think it allowed them to bring that classical element to the song, which Beyond Belief does need more. The sound that the keys bring to Beyond Belief is needed, I think, and really helps fill out the sound of the song. And number two, I think the message of Beyond Belief is about what we're striving to. But the final song is a message of what Jesus has done. And I think that's why you end with that song and not Beyond Belief. From a, if Petra was not a ministry, was not a Christian band, but puts Jesus as the focus, yeah, you probably would have Beyond Belief as your final song because that's the hallmark song of the band. That's what you finish with. You finish with your hallmark song that everyone knows. That's not what Petra's about. Petra's not about them. Petra's about Christ. And I think that's why we get the song order the way we do.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, killer rendition, though. Love it. Love it.
Yeah,
so much energy in this version. And something that I know, I have a recollection of this. One of my little bugbears about when we saw them at Toowoomba, Bob didn't play the intro right at Toowoomba. Mm. So it's got the intro that has those two riffs. Yeah. Anyway, he only played the one. It was just like one stuck on, like he was stuck on repeat on this like on the one riff. And it was just like, oh, come on, man. Like, it's not how it goes. But then they were just into it and rolling with it. And
yeah.
That's how it was. He did the same thing with Judas Kiss, though. I don't know if you can remember that, but he wasn't quite doing the intro to Judas Kiss in the familiar way.
That might have been, again, it might have been a time, how much time they had available to them.
True.
But I really enjoy that. I enjoy this version. It's great. It doesn't have the build through the song that the album has, the studio version has, because they just go full in. So you don't get that backed off first verse and then built up. You just the band are in, all in from the beginning. Take it and let it run. I love the breakdown in the final chorus. And rather than the guitar riff that you get in the album, they just back it down to voices for a moment and then all come back in again. I just like it. It creates a little bit of variation to that album version.
Yeah. No, it's really nicely done. And we roll into, something that everyone's been waiting for all night, and we're getting it right before the end, Bob Solos.
Yes. I love it. And look, what can you say? Bob is awesome. Bob is great. This solo just allows Bob to do what Bob does best. Have a bit of fun, bring some of the different elements of his guitaring. It's interesting that the DVD cuts the guitar solo in half. You only get half the solo on the DVD, which is a shame. But we've got the album here. It's just a brilliant piece of Bob's work. And what I really like is that as he finishes the solo, he allows it to lead directly into it. He continues to play to lead directly into the final song of He Came, He Saw, He Conquered. He doesn't stop playing. He sort of the way he finishes it allows him to sort of start playing that intro riff to He Came, He Saw, He Conquered.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's right. And look, it is an iconic song to end on. Mm. Iconic for the band, for their history. But as you say, also poignant in terms of their focus in ministry, and it's a real rocker that, from Schlitty's era. Mm.
When we saw them live at Easter, I thought that they'd done. If you go back to our previous conversation, I thought that they had put He Came, He Saw, He Conquered last when we saw them because it was Easter weekend. It was Easter Easter Sunday or Easter Saturday? When did we?
No, it was the Saturday. It was the
Saturday. Easter Saturday. But it was Easter
weekend. No, it was the Sunday.
Easter Sunday.
It was the Sunday.
Yeah, so it was Easter weekend, Easter Sunday, and I thought, well, they've put this song last because it's the message of Easter. Jesus came, died on the cross, rose again. He came, he saw, he conquered. And I thought that they probably did Beyond Belief as the last song everywhere else. But having heard it here on the album, and as I said just a moment ago, I feel that it's the thematic of the message of Christ as that's what they want to end on. Again, we're finishing. This is the end of 33 years of ministry. This is what the band is about. Jesus came, Jesus saw, Jesus conquered death and hell. It's about proclaiming that message to the world. And I think I actually think it's the perfect song for them to finish on.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing about this album that I actively dislike. So that's the backhanded compliment. No, the reality is I love it all. It's the album's a nostalgia trip, in the best way. And it's the kind of thing that reminds you, why you came to love the band and the music in the first place and why it still occupies such a place in your heart.
Hmm.
And the fact that, you're hearing these kind of poignant, personal, touching moments being captured and shared with the world. It's been a really beautiful ride. And if this was the last thing that Petra had ever done, look, it would have been a wonderful grace note to bow out on. It is fitting. As it turns out, and fortunately for us, there was more to come. There's more for everybody. They all had more to give. For the moment when this was the end, it was the right kind of it.
It was, and it's like you said, it's just it is a great album. It is a great tribute to the legacy of the band. It sums everything up. Look, there are songs that I'm sure every single fan, every single one of our listeners are sitting there going, I really wish they'd included this one song on the. I really wish they'd done this one song in the concert. We're all going to have that sort of like, I would have liked to have heard that song as part of the concert.
Oh.
But the fact of the matter is, I think they really brought together all aspects of the legacy of the band in this concert. The rock medley, the acoustic medley allowed them to touch on a lot of the legacy of the band. The full songs that we get are just, they have their role, the reason that they're included. It really is a magnificent album and a great, a fitting end to this part of the ministry of the full-time ministry of Petra. So I guess the question there needs to be lied, where does this album sit? We're talking about how much where we like it and stuff. How do we compare it to the other albums that have come out? And I guess the first place to start is, how does it compare to the other live album? Because that's where you can draw your first comparison, live to live.
It's so hard though, Dave, because this is, as we've been talking about, like you can hear all the imperfections in this album. You can hear the quote unquote issues, but there's something else going on that is indefinable and emotional and that is capturing the heart and the imagination that makes it something really special. So here's, because you know, to feed in, like to put it in cold terms. This album is not objectively as technically proficient nor as well recorded, and the songs are not as well performed as on Captured in Time and Space. Mm-hmm. Captured in Time and Space is a superior recorded album. It is the moments are more polished. You know, whichever version of that album you listen to, the three versions of it that exist, it's a more intricately produced piece of live entertainment, and it rightly sits high in their catalog because it's a really remarkable piece of work. This album is not as good as that in that regard. However, I don't like that emotion and that relational connection doesn't exist for Captured in Time and Space because they were just doing, in the midst of what they were doing their live concert tour for their most recent album. There's no sense in that of treating it like it was Greg X. Vols's last hurrah. That was not on the cards, so they're not referencing that. There's no poignancy beyond, you know, the message of the songs themselves. Whereas this album is just soaked in that. It's bleeding this kind of stuff.
So then the question needs to be asked, does heart and emotion and purpose outweigh the proficiency, the technical elements, and probably the better recording of a song? Which weighs out?
It's so hard to say. Because Captured in Time and Space also redeems Beat the System. And I know that, oh man, I know that 200 of you listening out there just threw your phones across the room at me having said that. My apologies. Captured in Time and Space improves upon the foundations laid by Beat the System. Um, And I feel like this is a hard one to make an objective call on. So if you're going to ask me, which of the two, like, I think I would still lean towards Catching in Time and Space more.
Yep.
As an album.
I think I agree with you. I think there's other elements to... There's other emotional elements that come out in Captured in Time and Space. The message, the altar call, the impromptu, the spirit-led song, The Great I Am. There are things on that are unique and element. I just think it just slightly... highlights it, but Farewell is not far behind, and therein I'm going to ask the question: the album that comes in after More Power, after Capturing Time and Space, is More Power too? Do we feel that Farewell is it only just under? Are we just sliding Farewell just in and under, or are you going to drop it little bit lower?
I think I'd slide it just under.
Yeah, and I think that's I agree with that. So it brings in Farewell at number five.
Okay.
Five all time. And I think we've spoken there. We've shared a lot. There's different, and there's probably people out there who are going, this is the number one album. Anyone who would argue that this is the number one album of all time, I wouldn't begrudge them that feel, you know?
Sure. Sure.
But for us and our project and our podcast, this is where we feel it sits. Mm. So before we go on to songs, how about the album cover? The band taking their bow, that element of this is the farewell, that the end of the line, the end of the concert, the end of the event.
Yeah. I really like it. I certainly think in terms of portrait covers, this is their... Do I think this is better than Petra Praise?
I agree.
I think
because
so.
There's a hard element to it, because the message of it being the farewell and the bow and the...
Well,
what
I think is really poignant about the cut is the fact that they don't show their faces, because you could do a shot of them taking a bow and still see their faces.
Mm.
But they've gone to lengths to not show it. It's an intentional choice.
Yeah.
Which again is that thing of like, it's a way of saying that this is not about us and it has never been about us.
Hmm.
It's about the Lord.
Hmm.
And yeah. So like I think I'd at least rank it over
Petra Praise.
Yep.
Okay, above Petra Praise is Jekyll and Hyde.
I'd put it above Jekyll and Hyde.
Okay, More Power to you. This is where we hit the portrait and the theme versus the stylistic, because our top two albums that stylized painting element, the This Means War one and the More Power to You one.
Yeah. I think I put this above More Power to You.
Okay. And I think this is more poignant. I agree. I think this is more, there is something about the More Power to You one that we've talked about over and over again, but this, there's an emotional aspect to this album cover.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How does the emotion of this album cover compare to the emotional connection of that man on his knees reaching out to God, the light streaming through?
I think This Means War takes it. You know,
I agree.
This is a well framed shot. This is a well-composed shot and an album cover. But yeah, I think, you know, yeah, I this means War was just the kind of cover you can't beat.
Yeah. All right. So as we come to the end of this full-time aspect of the band, I'm going to go through these lists. We've come to a point where sort of at this point it was considered the end of the ministry. Okay, so I'm gonna go through the lists in full, and then we've got some song things to finish up. But I'll start at the bottom. So we've got 5, 10, 15. There's 22 albums. No, 22 albums here. Okay, and this is coming up from the bottom. At the bottom of is our album covers. Petra Praise 2, No Doubt, Captured in Time and Space, Wake Up Call, Double Take, Beat the System, and Come and Join Us. Unseen Power, God Fixation, the original Petra album, Back to the Street and Revival. And our top 10, Never Say Die, On Fire, Not of This World, Washes Whiter Than Beyond the Belief. And our top 5, Petra Praise, Jekyll and Hyde, More Power to You, Farewell, and This Means War. So, you know, a real overall look there. We've got albums from all different eras slotting in at different points. Our album rankings. That's where it is. Okay, 22 albums we've reviewed. And this is where we sit. At number 22, we have Double Take. At 21, God Fixation. Coming up from there is Beat the System, the original Petra album, Come and Join Us, Petra Praise 2, and Back to the Street. At number 15 is No Doubt, followed by Unseen Power, Revival, Never Say Die, and Not of This World. And our top 10, Washes Whiter Than, Wake Up Call, On Fire, Petra Praise, The Rock Cries Out, More Power to You. At number 5 is Farewell. At number 4 is Captured in Time and Space. Number 3 is Jekyll and Hyde. Number 2 is This Means War. And number 1 is Beyond Belief. That's not bad for the back end of a band's career. 2 albums in the top 5. Their last 2 albums released in the top 5 all time. That's pretty impressive.
Particularly after coming through a period of albums that, you know, struggled to get a look in.
Mm, absolutely. All right. So a little bit of business to finish off from last episode, and we'll round this out and we'll be done. And that is our song list. Now, due to the purposes of time, we weren't able to do this last time. We talked last album about 3 songs that really stood out to us. And for our listeners to know, Lindsay and I sort of talked pre-show about just having a look. And we've got 3 songs that we feel are a chance of busting into these top lists from the last album. Okay. So those 3 songs, Lindsay.
Yes.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Yep.
Test of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry, I'm just having a mental blank for a minute.
I Will Seek You.
I Will Seek You. All right. Let's start with I Will Seek You.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm looking at our John Schlitt list here. Okay. And I'm going to ask where you feel I Will Seek You. Do you feel I Will Seek You is a better song than something like, I'm trying to remember where we were talking, something like Underground.
Something like Underground. Mm. I think I put it above Underground.
Okay.
Pretty sure, yes.
How about No Doubt?
Probably not quite.
Yeah, I think that's where it sits. So I Will Seek You slots in above, below No Doubt, above Underground. So if we move into our overall top list, that slots in there. All right. Test of Time. Having listened to the album version, having listened to the live version, I personally prefer the studio version of Test of Time over this, probably more for the way the backing vocals are able to be used on the studio version.
Yeah, it's a bit more atmosphere to the studio version.
Okay. So, Test of Time. How do you compare Test of Time to a song like Seen and Not Heard?
I've already forgotten the conversation we had earlier, Dave. You're gonna have to help me. I feel like we didn't put it above Seen and Not Heard.
No. And below Seen and Not Heard is Love.
It's not going above Love.
Okay. And then below that is No Doubt. I think it's above No Doubt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's putting it there. Puts it there. Test of Time. All right. And Jekyll and Hyde. Now, I talked earlier about that I actually prefer the live version of Jekyll and Hyde to the studio version because of the extra elements on the drums that come through. That's my personal preference.
Mm.
Jekyll and Hyde compared to Seen and Not Heard.
I put it above Seen and Not Heard.
Okay, and so would I. Creed, the album version of Creed.
Mm-hmm. That's a really, really hard one. I think maybe I'm putting it above Creed.
I agree. All Fired Up.
I think I can put it above All Fired Up, although it's getting more difficult.
All right. This will be... I agree with you. So I think it brings a stronger feel and a harder edge than All Fired Up does. All Fired Up is a good song, but this Jekyll and Hyde, there's just something about its message and its power beyond belief.
No.
Okay. So I don't think anyone would argue with that. And so Jekyll and Hyde comes in to the John Schlitt playlist at number 3. But now we need to move to the overall playlist and ask ourselves this question. So we're not saying it's as good as Beyond Belief. How do you compare it to Grave Robber, live version of Grave Robber? I couldn't do it.
No, I can't beat. Can't beat Grave Robber.
It Is Finished.
I can't replace It Is Finished either.
Judas Kiss.
Still can't do it.
Okay. Adonai.
This Adonai has come from
the Beat the System version.
I can put Jekyll and Hyde above Adonai from Beat the System.
Yes. This conversation will get revisited in a couple of albums time.
Look, everybody knows what we're on about here, Dave. I think everyone has already figured it out. So it's all good. This could change, but
that basically brings Jekyll and Hyde in at the number 6 song of all time for our Petra playlist.
Yeah.
Test of Time comes in at number 24, I think it is. No, sorry, 5, 10, 15, 6, 7, 8. Number 19 is Test of Time, and I Will Seek You is 21. So if we go back to those conversations we were talking about last album about how good Jekyll and Hyde is, we have 3 songs from from that last album inside our top 25 overall songs of Petra. Mm. That's a very strong showing.
It really is.
Now, here's the question to ask. Do the medleys on this album deserve a place in our playlist. Now, I will note that the previous, we didn't end up doing it with the previous medleys, but there's something about these medleys. Do they get a unique spot? Do they sit outside the playlist? There's so many of them are already in the playlist on their own.
No, look, I think because we've already got a bunch of these in the play, it's too fiddly and too complex to start doing this.
That's a fair. I'd agree with that. There is
a wonderful accompaniments to the playlist.
And I think they'll have their, I think they'll be, they're like addendums to the playlist.
Yeah.
They're bonus.
The previews before the main feature.
So, well, there you go, guys. Three songs off Jekyll and Hyde make the top 25. Farewell comes in as our fifth best album of all time. What a journey this has been. A fitting farewell, they might say.
Absolutely. And
after that, after you bring the emotion of this is the end, a little light appears. Because it's not the end. This journey's not over. We've still got stuff to come.
Yeah. Can you just imagine that it was just a moment when Greg turned to Bob backstage and said something along the lines of, I forgot how much I missed this, man.
We have more to come. And it's going to be interesting because before we get to Classic Petra, Bob and John have a little treat for us.
I guess, of course. Yes.
And because we're going to go from a five-piece to a four-piece, and in our next episode, we're going to have a two-piece because we're going to be looking at just two guys.
From?
Two guys from Petra. In fact, there might even be something to consider as an album title.
That's not a bad name, that is. So, again, interesting thing. This will be the first time I've ever listened to, as of the moment of this recording, I have never listened to two guys from Petra. So
we are including for those of you who are listening, we are including two guys from Petra in this journey. For various reasons and probably most prominently because it includes the leftover songs from this album.
From this album, yeah. It's kind of like our being pedantic and needing to put a cap on everything about it, which means that there's going to be more to come because they're going to record something for the 50th. So, you know, stay tuned.
Who knows?
But interesting. Yeah. So look, I've got, for the first time, I've got some genuine first time homework to do. So I'm looking forward to that.
And I'm looking forward to everyone who's listening to us continuing to join us on this journey. We really appreciate your patronage. We appreciate that you the feedback that we've gotten, the likes, the comments. We really enjoy the interactions that we've had. Thank you so much for listening to these two Aussie guys talking about Petra for hours on end. We really enjoyed it. If the listeners want to reach out to us, Lindsay, how do they do it?
Guys, you can send us messages through Facebook on our Facebook page, On Rock, A Petrospective. We're attached to a number of Facebook groups. You might be able to find us through those means. But the most surefire way is to send us an email at wemeanrock@gmail.com. I'm sometimes slow in responding, but I do my best to get around to you all eventually. Guys, like I can hardly believe that we have made it through to the end. I look here, I always have the Wikipedia page open for every album as we're doing it, just for quick referencing. And people might know that one of the features on Wikipedia for bands is their chronology. They have a little buttons, little links near the top of the page, which has got the album before this one and the album after the one that you're currently looking at. And it's so sad to me finally to be looking here and there's nothing that follows. After Farewell is this big blank space. It's a bit wistful, but as David said, there's more to explore and more to enjoy, and it's all about legacy from this point on, which is great. But I'm excited because this will actually be the discovery of something brand new for me. So the next one's going to be really, really cool. We've got classic Petra to come. We've got... Did original Petra record anything again, Dave?
No, we've got classic Petra and we've got CPR, Back to the Rocks.
Yeah, CPR. So, anyway, please keep tuning in for our takes on those ones. Give us your feedback. Let us know how you felt about the whole Farewell situation. Were you there? What was it like? And what are your reflections on those events? But until next time, guys, I'm Lindsay Hall.
And I'm Dave Hall.
Saying farewell.
Farewell.